Right now, it's time for our weekly Wisconsin News Roundup, checking in with reporters around the state about the stories they're covering. First, the Eau Claire City Council unanimously passed a new ordinance that will require homeowners to replace lead service lines on their property if they're discovered during utility work. Rich Kramer is a WPR News reporter based in Eau Claire. Rich, welcome back to the show.
Thanks for having me.
Well, how does this work? What changes under this new ordinance?
Well, really what changes is that what was a voluntary program, but also was highly encouraged by the city, and which also already has included grant money to help homeowners with the cost, but it's now mandatory. Basically, now there's a threat of fines, I guess, but the city said that they're not going into this to try to punish anybody, but they just want to make sure that they replace around 830 lead service lines that exist in communities or in neighborhoods of Eau Claire. So these are the water lines that go from the water main under the street that goes to the property line, and from the property line to the house, that's the homeowner's responsibility, and from the water main to this curb, basically, is the city's responsibility. So on the homeowner side, about 830 lines need to be replaced. Homeowners, once these things are found by the city notifies the homeowner. They have 90 days to replace them or get some sort of contract in place with a contractor who will do the work. If not, they're subject to potentially fines between $60 and $500 per day. But again, the city stressed big time at the meeting that that's not what they're out to do. They're not trying to punish anybody. They just want to help get these things out of there.
A lot of communities are wrestling with the health impacts of these lead pipes. As I understand it, Rich, and I think this may have come up in your reporting, part of the problem is that if you just replace the city's part up to the home part and not the lead that runs the rest of the way into the house, that could actually, at least at first, make things even worse?
Yeah, much worse. So the way it was described to me by Eau Claire's basically public works director, Jeff Pippinger, is that they add things into the water to kind of keep the lead from seeping into the water, basically hydrated lime. And what that does is it lowers the or it raises the pH so that the water's not as acidic and not as likely to eat away at the lead and dissolve it, for lack of better terms. But the lime also creates kind of a white powdery coating that keeps the lead from making contact with the water. So when they do disrupt things on the city side, Pippinger said it's highly likely, and it's been shown in many studies, that coating will chip off, and then you'll have dangerous levels of lead potentially going into the home. And that's bad for anyone, but particularly small children and pregnant women.
And you mentioned this grant program going to help these residents replace those pipes. Are other cities around the state looking to get in on similar kinds of programs with their lead service lines?
Oh, absolutely. So the Department of Natural Resources has a safe drinking water program, and it's a revolving loan fund, but grants, for lack of better terms. They, some of the cities that have implemented ordinances like Eau Claire include Madison, Milwaukee, Kewaunee, Clintonville, Kenosha, Menasha, and Manitowoc. But more than that, a lot of other communities besides those have applied for this grant funding to help. Eau Claire has gotten, since 2017, about $800,000 in grant funds, and that has led to, the city said they spent about half of that, have replaced about 153 lead service lines, so they're hoping to get another $400,000 to do 200 more yet in the near future.
Rich, thanks a lot for joining us.
Hey, thanks for having me.
That's Rich Kramer, WPR reporter based in Eau Claire, with us to talk about a new rule in Eau Claire requiring residents to replace lead service lines. Now, the Wisconsin Public Service Commission signed off this week on construction of a $700 million natural gas generator in Superior, despite some concerns from environmental groups. Chris Hubbeck reports on energy and the environment for the Wisconsin State Journal. Chris, welcome back.
Hi, happy to be here.
Well, describe for us the scope of this project and its potential energy impact.
Well, this is about a 625 megawatt, what's called a combined cycle natural gas plant, which means it's a more efficient plant that captures a little bit more of the heat from the natural gas. It's kind of a unique ownership model in that it would be jointly owned by Dairyland Power Cooperative, which is a rural electric generation cooperative based in La Crosse, and then a subsidiary of Minnesota Power, which is a Duluth-based investor-owned utility, and that it would serve as essentially a merchant plant selling power into the market.
It got the thumbs up from the state's Public Service Commission, but there have been concerns from environmental groups. What are some of the worries that those groups have raised?
I think the number one concern for most of the groups is simply the greenhouse gas emissions. Estimates are it would be about 2.5 million tons of carbon dioxide a year. And this is a plant with an expected life of 30 years or more. So that would be running well into the time when, when carbon emissions really need to get to zero to avoid some pretty catastrophic rise in global temperatures. There are secondary concerns about just whether the aquifer there can support it. Some of the models showed that it would deplete the groundwater because it does require quite a bit of water. There are other concerns about erosion, runoff, loss of wetlands.
And in our last few moments, Chris, I got the thumbs up for the Public Service Commission. What other regulatory steps are left?
Well, it's got about half a dozen permits that will be required from the DNR for everything from air emissions to water use. It's also facing some hurdles back in Minnesota where it was approved. Minnesota Power's investment was approved last year, but just late last year, an appeals court ruled that the regulators there did need to consider some of the environmental impacts, which they had not done. And so that will have to get another review in Minnesota.
We'll keep watching out for that. Chris, thanks a lot for joining us.
It's my pleasure to be here.
Chris Hubbuck is an energy and environmental reporter at the Wisconsin State Journal. He talked with us about a major natural gas plant in Superior getting cleared for construction by the state's Public Service Commission. Now, federal agents and Milwaukee law enforcement led two major drug busts this week, arresting more than 24 people in the city and in Puerto Rico. John Diedrich is an investigative reporter for the Milwaukee Journal-Sentinel. John, welcome back to the show.
Thanks for having me.
Well, you reported on two big drug busts in Milwaukee this week. Let's focus on Operation Island Hopper. More than 20 people arrested, most in Milwaukee, some in Puerto Rico. What do we know about how this drug operation worked?
Well, it's interesting. So this is an operation that brought in cocaine into Milwaukee. The origins of the cocaine go to Central and South America. Colombia drug operation was supplying cocaine, which ultimately went through the Dominican Republic into Puerto Rico and into Milwaukee. The really interesting aspect of this case is that it entered into the U.S. mail system in Puerto Rico. And so individuals in Puerto Rico were mailing cocaine, large, like six and a half pounds of cocaine at a time, in the U.S. postal system from Puerto Rico to Milwaukee. And again, to remind folks, Puerto Rico is a U.S. territory, so they have the post office there.
How did authorities first figure out this was going on?
You know, it's not clear. It's 2018 when the first parcel was detected. They didn't specifically talk about detection ways. I know from earlier reporting that they're looking for things like suspicious addresses or packaging that might have the hallmarks like overtaped, things of that nature that sometimes signify a questionable parcel. They also have informants in the case. So that's a possibility that it was a combination of a suspicious-looking package and also informants that pointed them to this Puerto Rico to Milwaukee connection.
So talk about the arrests now. What do we know about that?
Well, so this week they had a takedown involving 300 officers that spread out across the city. There's 26 defendants in this case. As you mentioned, there was another case as well, coincidentally unrelated to this, but that there was a roundup that day as well. But in this case, in Operation Island Hopper, there were 26 defendants, most of them in Milwaukee. They spread out simultaneously early on Wednesday morning, as they do, and arrested everyone. And they started making appearances in federal federal court here in Milwaukee this week. There are four people who are still being sought, both in Milwaukee and Puerto Rico. Charges are very significant. We're talking about 10-year minimums if people are convicted, up to life in prison. And that's because of the amount of the drugs that were coming through. The U.S. Attorney, Matt Krieger, here for the Eastern District of Wisconsin, calls it incredible volumes of drugs. You can see from the criminal complaint, which is 230 pages long, just a documentation about packages coming constantly from Puerto Rico into Milwaukee, and then the cash being sent also through the mail from Milwaukee back to Puerto Rico, and ultimately probably down to Colombia, where the drugs were purchased in the first place.
Is there a thought or any indication that, okay, if they're mailing cocaine from Puerto Rico to Milwaukee, this might be an operation that would also send cocaine to other cities as well?
Well, that's right. There is there's indications in the criminal complaint that cocaine was also forwarded on to East Coast cities, to cities along the southwest border between the United States and Mexico. So in that way, Milwaukee became a, you know, sort of hub of cocaine distribution out, which is what you wouldn't think of that. You think more of like Miami or Houston or whatever being closer to the border. But because of the mail connection, Milwaukee actually became a hub of distributing cocaine to other places. And, you know, it's how this all stood up. It's not exactly clear how these individuals came to Milwaukee. There is a significant Puerto Rican population here. Most of them, you know, law abiding. At some point, though, somebody recognized the ability to get into the mail system, and that was the key. Now, the message that the U.S. Attorney has sent out, as he said, this case shows that we're going to be tough on this and detect contraband coming through the mail. I can tell you from experience, having covered federal courts for a while, most often what you see are cases involving marijuana because that has smell to it. Things like cocaine, heroin, and others don't have smell to it. And so, and because there's so many parcels of mail that go through the U.S. mail system, there is this challenge that authorities have to find out. And again, the U.S. attorney talked about the incredible amount of cocaine that was coming in and the more than $1 million, at least $1 million in proceeds that went back to Puerto Rico and ultimately into South America through this operation.
John, thanks a lot for joining us today.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me.
John Diedrich is an investigative reporter at the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. He talked with us about a major drug bust on Wednesday that resulted in more than 20 arrests. He helped us finish out our Wisconsin News Roundup.